There are over 550 million firearms in worldwide circulation. That's one firearm for every 12 people on the planet. The only question is, how do we arm the other 11?
Selling guns is like selling vacuum cleaners. You make calls, pound the pavement. I supplied every army but the Salvation Army.
Can you bring me the gun of Rambo?
Part one, two, or three?
I've only seen part one.
By the mid-80s, my weapons were represented in 8 of the world's top 10 war zones.
Damn, you are good.
You get rich by giving the poorest people on the planet the means to continue killing each other.
Guys, guys, guys!
Say what you like about warlords and dictators. They always pay their bills on time.
I would tell you to go to hell, but I think you're already there.
This is your thing?
I'm in transport.
That's what I want.
She doesn't know how you pay for all this.
We don't talk about it. How many car salesmen talk about their work?
I'm not saying I didn't have setbacks.
There are men going through our garbage cans. Is there anything I should be worried about?
No, nothing.
The first and most important rule of gun running is never get shot with your own merchandise.
Is everything okay?
Rough day at the office. We're the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms.
Let me guess, this isn't about the alcohol or the tobacco.
Where there's a will, there's a weapon.
You know, they call me the Lord of War, but perhaps it is you.
It's Warlord.
Thank you, but I prefer it, Maui.
Is this how you want to be remembered?
I don't want to be remembered at all.
Hello and welcome to The Complete Works, an in-depth look into the career and filmography of Nicolas Cage. My name is Mike Smith, and joining me on this journey into the depths of true cagedom is my friend, my co-host, and my fellow cageaholic,
Mike DiCriccio.
How you doing today, Mike?
Good. It's another wonderful day to talk about a Nicolas Cage movie and squeak my chair at the same time. So you're welcome, listeners.
Yes, if you were wondering, if you've been listening to this podcast and wondering, like, where is that squeaking coming from? That's been pervading over the course of 42 episodes. There it is. That's the one.
Just for you. Just for you, Mike.
That's the squeak. So, Mike, the year was 2005. George W. Bush had just been elected president for a second term. The U.S. was deep into the Iraq War. Hurricane Katrina had just hit the U.S. People were really incredibly angry at the government in a way we haven't really seen until today, until right now.
Yep. It pretty much hasn't stopped since then.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like there was a lull. I mean, okay, maybe there's a slight bias in that I feel like everything was pretty good under Obama for a long time, but that's...
But this is a different podcast. This is a different podcast.
It's a different podcast, yeah. But anyway, I feel like 2005... was kind of the tipping point where people really started to hate George W. Bush and his administration. You know, I really feel like that's a really interesting period of time. Like, you know, people didn't – the country was very divided at the 2000 election. Obviously, there's a huge recount thing going on. A lot of people really hated George W. Bush before then. And then 9/11 happened, and the country kind of rallied around Bush because he was the one that was in charge at the time, and he kind of led the country out of that.
Right.
And then as the years went on, people were like, no, wait, I hate him again. Everything he does is the worst. And so that's when people started to really hate him and his administration again. And it makes the movie we're about to talk about today particularly interesting, because in 2005, Nicolas Cage starred in a politically charged movie about a gunrunner supplying weapons to countries all over the world. That movie was called Lord of War. And watching it today, I feel like the movie kind of feels like a time capsule of 2005 in a way, of what people were feeling at that time. And it also feels kind of incredibly relevant to the modern age and what's going on today.
Yeah, I definitely agree. It took me, I mean, I don't want to say it felt like it took a while to like get to its political point, because it's kind of there all the way throughout. But it does really double down on it in the final, you know, moments of the film. Yeah. But it was, you know, this is a movie I haven't seen in a while. I had seen it.
You had seen
a
this
couple
before?
Times. Yeah. Particularly, I'm sure we'll talk about the opening credit sequence. But I had seen this a few times, and I didn't really remember it being political. I thought it was just kind of like I hesitate to say like Wolf of Wall Street kind of thing, but just like a look behind, you know,
that's
at this
the
like
comparison that I kept making in my head too. It feels yeah. like Scorsese light in a way. Like it feels like it wants to be a Goodfellas or a Wolf of Wall Street, and it's I feel like it doesn't really have the energy needed to get to that point in a way. But yeah, I had never seen Lord of War before, so this was completely fresh for me. But you'd seen this a couple of times?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Cool beans.
I thought you were going to keep going.
No, that was it. Now, Mike, have you seen any of the other movies in director Andrew Nichols' repertoire?
Not that I am aware of. Okay. Perhaps if you read some titles,
I'll talk about a couple right now. So the movie was written and directed by Andrew Nichol, and he's a guy who, to me, never really fulfilled the promise of his early career. You know, his very first film as a writer-director was 1997's Gattaca, which is a movie that I really like. Have you seen Gattaca, Mike?
I have, but not in a really long time. Okay. I need to rewatch that.
I like Gattaca a lot. That's a really fun movie with Ethan Hawke and Uma Thurman. And the very next year, he wrote The Truman Show with Jim Carrey. And that's a great movie, The Truman Show. That was directed by Peter Weir. I think he originally intended to direct The Truman Show, and I think he didn't because he was focusing on Gattaca. I think both those movies are great. And from there, it's kind of a bit hit or miss. Often, he will have a really great idea, but the execution just isn't there. For example, 2011's In Time, which is a movie about a society that uses minutes in a lifetime as currency. Have you seen In Time, Mike?
I have, yeah.
Yeah, I think that's a really like fun and potentially really interesting idea. And I think the movie overall is kind of fun. I feel like I remember having an okay time with it, but it kind of takes that idea and then it kind of just evolves into a Bonnie and Clyde story. Mm-hmm. Throughout, and it becomes a lot less interesting as it goes on. So it's a weird movie. And then in recent years, he directed The Host in 2013, which is an adaptation of a Stephanie Meyer novel. That was the first big Meyer adaptation after the Twilight movies ended. And then in 2014, he came out with Good Kill, starring Ethan Hawke and January Jones, and that's a movie I don't think anybody saw.
Nope.
And currently he's working on another sci-fi movie called Anon with Clive Owen and Amanda Seyfried, which will likely be released sometime next year, I would guess. Now, the making of Lord of War is actually kind of interesting, Mike, because it seems the production worked with actual gunrunners during the making of the film.
What? That's insane.
Yeah, I know. A lot of the weapons and tanks that you see on display in the film, they are not props. Those are real weapons. Those are real tanks. The filmmakers had to return those to the gunrunners when they were done because they needed to be sold back to another country. I think that's fascinating and like kind of fucked up, right?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Like this movie,
really weird.
This movie is essentially about like the moral complications that come with the gun running. Like how do you justify selling weapons to countries that are going to use them to kill people? So actually working with the gun runners and using those same weapons during filming, I feel like it had to have presented like some kind of moral issue on set, you know?
You would think. It seems interesting that like a studio or someone would would profit, like, you know, I assume they're getting these things at a discount if they're getting them from arms dealers, right? Like,
well, to be fair, actually, this movie was not produced by any American studio. No American studio would finance this movie.
Wonder why.
that may have had something to do with it. And yeah, the film does say at the end that it is based on a true story. And it sort of is. Cage's character is a composite of five different real life gun runners. It's not really based on any one true story, but it's just kind of compositing and picking and choosing what it wants to tell. And a lot of significant liberties were taken with several other characters as well. Now, Nicolas Cage in Lord of War plays Yuri Orlov, and it's his story and his narration that drives the movie. And his brother Vitaly is played by Jared Leto, this time not wearing the word damaged on his forehead, although he might as well be in this role.
Yeah,
this
role. Would have been appropriate.
Honestly, it would have been more subtle than what the movie does with his character.
Which movie? Wait.
Either one. Take your pick.
Either one. Okay. Yeah. Just checking.
Jack Valentine, the Interpol agent hunting Cage down. He is played by one of my favorite actors, Ethan Hawke. I'm a big Hawke head, as they say.
Can't just make up stuff, Mike.
Is Hawke head not a thing? I feel like Hawke head could be.
Sure, it could
be. I'm going to make it a thing. In any case. Right. And then Cage's wife, Ava Fontaine, is played by Bridget Moynihan, known to many for her role on Blue Bloods, but known to me as John Wick's dead wife in the John Wick movies.
Yeah.
So that was kind of cool to see her. And then Eamon Walker from Oz and Chicago Fire plays the warlord Andre Baptiste Sr. Mother Flippin' Ian Holm appears in this movie as a Simon Weiss. Of course, he was Ash in Alien, Bilbo Baggins in Lord of the Rings, and a whole bunch of other stuff. Tanit Phoenix plays a woman named Candy. She was the star of a Cinemax After Dark show called Femme Fatales, and she's also the wife of actor Charlton Copley.
Wow, how about that?
So that's pretty wild. I dropped my pen. It was so wild that I had to drop my pen.
Earth-shattering.
And at one point, you actually hear the voice of a Colonel Oliver Southern, and that voice is none other than Donald Sutherland.
Wow.
Yeah.
What a weird casting.
Yeah, I guess there's just a thrown in cameo there, but that's pretty wild. And then a couple other ones. Eugene Lazarev, who appears in all three Call of Duty Modern Warfare games as Imran Zikiv, plays General Dmitry Orlov, Cage's uncle. And finally, Nicolas Cage's own son, Weston Coppola Cage, appears as a young Russian helicopter mechanic named Vladimir in this movie.
I wondered why that kid got such a big part.
Yeah, when Cage sees him, he actually says to him, "Son, get down from there before you get hurt."
Yeah,
that's the actual line of dialogue in the movie. He's talking to his real life son. It's pretty wild, Mike.
Whoa, fourth wall.
Yeah, if you are not familiar with Weston Coppola Cage, I believe he's the lead singer of a black metal group. So
there's something more appropriate for the son of Nicolas Cage to be doing.
Yeah,
that's amazing.
That's pretty cool. And the film was written and directed by Andrew Niccol 3 years after his previous directorial feature, which was Simone with Al Pacino and Catherine Keener. And in between that and Lord of War, he was also credited with the story on Steven Spielberg's The Terminal with Tom Hanks, which is a movie I actually kind of like. I like The Terminal. It's fun. It's nice.
Yeah.
And after Lord of War, his next film would be 2011's In Time, 6 years later. Lord of War did okay at the box office on a budget of $50 million. The movie made about $72 million, though I might note that most of that is actually from foreign markets, which is interesting because this seems like it's a distinctly American tale. So it's interesting that Americans wouldn't flock to this specifically during the time period that it was released in, because it seems like it kind of has had its pulse on the political moments, so to speak. And the IMDb plot synopsis for Lord of War reads, an arms dealer confronts the morality of his work as he is being chased by an Interpol agent. So, Mike, you've seen Lord of War a couple of times, apparently. So what are your overall thoughts on this movie? How did you react to it now? How did you react to it then? What were your overall thoughts?
Well, like I kind of said earlier, I didn't particularly remember it being political or very political, which kind of seems like I missed the point, right, at the time, viewing it now. But that said, it does it's, you know, the synopsis says that it's about Yuri or Cage's character confronting the morality of his profession. And it feels like that's an overstatement in some way. It feels like for a long time, like a good two-thirds, like that, you know, for, well, I don't know what to say, it's a two-hour movie, I don't know.
It's exactly 2 hours, actually, yeah.
Yeah, for like a real long time, we're just kind of like partying with Yuri. The morality confronting doesn't happen till very late in the game. To me, it doesn't seem like he is struggling with his profession, what he does for till like the last 20 minutes, maybe.
Yeah, I'm with you on that.
But that said, I still kind of do have fun. It does some interesting stuff. There's some weird camera work things going on. There's one scene in particular I'll talk about later, I guess. But I think for me, the big highlight is the opening credits to this movie. That's like its own short film. I think it's literally called like The Life of a Bullet or something like that. Where if you haven't seen it, it's the camera is placed as a bullet from the punched out of metal in the factory all the way. We've followed the track of the bullet or life of the bullet until it is fired out of a gun into and kills a child soldier in Africa. And it's incredibly political, like right out of the bat where where we're watching. We try, you know, Russian government people, soldiers selling this weapons to African warlords and the children soldiers and all this stuff. And it's kind of sets the tone for the rest of the movie, you know, literally it's the opening credits. Right. So it's, and the movie as a whole is kind of, it's interesting in some respects, like I said, but mostly middle of the road, I guess. I don't really know if I have any strong opinions either way about anything that's particularly going on.
You are the neutrinos in Futurama.
Yeah. It's been a thing lately, I guess, for me with these movies. Our post-action hero, we made it Ma phase. We're kind of just in the coasting superstar phase. Not that Cage isn't putting in a whole lot of effort.
Right. There have been a lot of great movies that we've talked about. Like, we talked about Adaptation, and, like, you know, I like Matchstick Men. National Treasure was right. fun. And, you know, there's a lot of good stuff that we've talked about. It's just, we do feel like there are, you know, there's, like, you know, for every Adaptation, there's a Captain Corelli's Mandolin or a Wind Talkers. That's just, like, right. Yeah, come on, let's get on to, like, they just kind of middle of the road, or in the case of Captain Corelli's Mandolin, really bad.
We're not doing the Red Rock West or Wild at Hearts anymore.
Right, that's what it seems like, for sure.
What about you, Mike? What did you think of Lord at War?
Yeah, well, I agree with you about the Life of a Bullet sequence. That's, the movie never gets better than that. I think that's a really powerful opening sequence. It's like a good 5 minutes of...
Yeah, it's a real long time.
You're just watching from the perspective of a bullet through the factory and through the shipping, and, you know, it's in the box and it's out of the box, and you see it being sent to other countries and finally loaded into a gun and shot, and it's really powerful, and it basically makes the entire point of the movie in that 5 minute span. And then there's another 2 hour movie after that.
And then we have to take the long route to watch the same thing.
Yeah. And I think this is a movie that is incredibly confused about what it wants to be, in a way. Like, it was marketed. I you know, when we start this podcast, I'll play the trailer, as I always do, for the movie before we actually start talking. So the listeners will have heard the trailer by now. This was marketed as an action movie. If you watch that trailer, it is, you know, crazy rock music and, like, fast editing and guns blazing all the time, and, you know, it's specifically marketed to make it look like an action movie. Even the logo of the movie is ridiculous. It's like these big, these big Lord of War, like, big metal font, and then, like, bullets, like, go through the Lord of War logo. It's insane, and it's honestly, like, a little upsetting, but I don't know. To me, this kind of takes, like, a very, like, both sides approach to the issue of gun running. It tells you, like, up front, like, what Cage is doing is wrong, I feel like. But it also seems to stress that if he didn't do it, someone else would, so why not just let him do it?
So why not profit? It's kind of like the moral of the movie,
And I think the subject is interesting enough that the movie, like, basically works. Like, I was interested in the movie throughout. And I think it's a solid look at a practice that a lot of Americans may not have been that familiar with at the time of the film's release. Like, this was 2005. This was around the time, like, it was being revealed that, like, Iraq didn't have any WMDs, and there was a whole hullabaloo around that. And you know, so...
what's a Halliburton?
Exactly. So I feel like you know, people would have been interested in what this movie was doing. At least I would have assumed so. It didn't do that great in America, but overall it made a profit. I think the movie does suffer a lot from telling and not showing. I feel like Cage's voiceover really drags the movie down for me. I don't know how you felt about that, but I like, we mentioned The Wolf of Wall Street. We mentioned Goodfellas. I think it's very Scorsese-esque in that way. And, you know, I think with Goodfellas and with The Wolf of Wall Street, it's kind of the same thing. We're watching these people do horrific, terrible things. And Scorsese finds a way to not exactly make the characters likable, but make them, like, really engaging and energetic, and you want to see what happens to this character and, like, what's happening in their lives. And the voiceover kind of adds to that. The voiceover in those movies isn't redundant. It's kind of just, like, adding commentary almost. And in this movie, the voiceover is just kind of there to explain to you what's happening.
In those other movies, you know, in Goodfellas and Wolf of Wall Street and stuff, they kind of provide context, right? And the perspective of the character that was in the scene a little more. But here, like you said, it's literally just like, and then I went to Sierra Leone, and then, like, we're in Sierra Leone. Like, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah, and then, you know, there'll be multiple scenes where a character will do something, and then Cage will, like, take it a long time to just explain why that character did that thing, and it takes away from the audience's ability to just, like, infer or figure out what's going on their own. You know, I feel like you lose a lot of character nuance that way. At a certain point, it almost plays more like an audiobook. Like, Because, you know, the Scorsese films, they all have voiceover. This movie like really overdoes it with the voiceover. Like Arrested Development Season 4 levels of voiceover, where it's just like constant.
Yeah, it is very pervasive throughout the film. And that kind of structure of like the guy telling us the story from prison type thing. Like while we get to watch it all happening, yeah. I don't know.
And I felt like I could have listened to this movie on my commute to work, and I feel like I would have gotten the same.
I would have gotten the same out
of it as I did watching it. And the movie is like decidedly not very subtle about what it's doing. I think my favorite line in the movie is when Cage is meeting with Andre Baptiste, and Andre says to him, "You know, they call me the Lord of War, but perhaps it is you." Yeah. And it's like, oh man, perhaps it's worth a twist. It reminded me of an episode of The Walking Dead in like season four or season five, where they're all like, you know, huddled together like in the rain or something, and Rick has like this long monologue, and then he says like, "You know something, maybe we are the Walking Dead."
Oh man,
that was kind of how I felt after that line. But
I did halfway enjoy that recurring joke of.
I like the joke too. They made a joke out of it, which is, you know, probably the best way to go.
Yeah, like the hunt of a witch, and he's like, "Oh, you mean witch hunt?" Like that whole running gag.
Yeah,
but there, I think there's not a whole lot subtlety, like you said, and not a whole lot going on. That seems way harsher than I intend it to. But I feel like there's not anything incredibly unique, or as we just kind of said, they're kind of aping Goodfellas the whole movie.
Yeah. I mean, I kind of feel about this movie the same way I did about like The Big Short. Did you ever see The Big Short?
No, but I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
It feels like it's a good educational experience, and it's a better educational experience than it is an actual narrative.
Right.
Is kind of how I felt about it. And I think I like The Big Short a little bit more than this. But that said, there are sequences in this movie that are great. You know, there are – I don't want to put down the movie entirely. There are, you know, particularly anything that puts Nicolas Cage and Ethan Hawke together. I think that's really entertaining, and, like, their dynamic is really good. And there's an alternate version of this movie that's just their cat and mouse game, like in Heat. And that would be a movie. That would be a movie.
Yeah.
And the movie like takes place over a period of 20 years. And there's absolutely zero effort made to look at like the characters have changed at all.
Yep. Not even he was wearing glasses to show time had passed.
Yeah. I am pretty sure that Jared Leto has the same jacket and haircut throughout the entire movie.
Yeah.
And it's supposed to take place from like 1980 to 2000. Like it is bizarre. It's like watching the three X-Men prequels all at once, you know. It's it is not great on that front. But yeah, it does feel like Scorsese light, but the movie does have some visual flair. You know, you mentioned the Life of a Bullet sequence, and that's a great sequence. There's a bit where you see a village dismantling an airplane, and the time lapse showing that was pretty cool, and like there's cool stuff, you know, happening throughout.
Yeah, that stripping of the plane was the one scene that I like took note of. That it's like almost presented as like a nature documentary, particularly with Cage's voiceover going on at that point, where, you know, he's just sitting there watching, and then we go into this 24-hour time lapse of a plane being stripped, to like leaving just the skeleton, which was really cool. Maybe a little problematic in some way, like to have a nature documentary thing going on there.
Possibly,
but still interesting. I don't know. That was the most visually unique and interesting thing that I noticed, at least, or that jumped out to me.
Yeah, definitely. So, Mike, we should talk about Nicolas Cage. What did you think of Nicolas Cage's performance in Lord of War?
I think he is doing a very good, like, smarmy schmoozer kind of character. It's the functional version of his character from Matchstick Men, right? This kind of like smooth, quick talking, quick witted con man type deal, but all the time, where, you know, Matchstick Men, it was only in the moment of the con.
Right.
He's doing a good job. I don't think there's any particularly crazy freakouts other than his recurring theme of a drug trip sequence, which we've mentioned a couple times.
Yeah.
But other than that, I don't remember anything jumping out as particularly Cage meltdown freakout type thing.
Yeah, no, I think this is not the movie you go to when you're looking for Cage meltdowns and freakouts. Yeah, Cage is good in this movie. I think he's kind of understated in this movie. He's also the only one in the movie that I feel like is even trying for subtlety at any points throughout, which is not something you can usually say of Nicolas Cage.
Yeah.
But like, you know, watching him like next to Jared Leto, like like, come on, man. Jared Leto is... I'm not the biggest Jared Leto fan in the world, and I think he's not great in this movie. You know, he plays Cage's brother, and Jared Leto's character is this, like, drug addict and, like, you know, kind of the family fuck-up. And, you know, there's, like, scenes of Jared Leto, like, just snorting all the cocaine and, like, making a map of Ukraine out of cocaine and, like...
Was really funny, but like in the dumbest way.
Yeah, it is weird. I do think Cage's voiceover drags the film down, but he does a really good job delivering it too. You know, like I don't begrudge Cage for that. I think just the actual writing of the voiceover is not great, and it takes up so much of the movie.
It is interesting that Cage seems to be, other than maybe Ethan Hawke's character, the only one that's like not a caricature. Like we meet his uncle on the boat, who's like always drunk, and he's just literally like cartoonishly drunk all the time.
Yeah. Or like the evil warlord who's just like, yes, I'm an evil warlord. I'm going to shoot everything. And yeah, that's kind of,
yeah, I have a golden AK-47 and like girls dressed as Dallas cheerleaders, like all this stuff. Like, sure.
Yeah. Yeah. It's weird. It feels like, it almost feels like it's trying to be like a dark comedy in that sense. And I think it is.
Yeah.
It kind of is that, but at the same time, like it's not, I feel like it doesn't go far enough in that direction. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. If it's going for that. So kind of just, it's in this like kind of in between space where it's sort of a dark comedy, but also like sort of a biopic on what's happening. And, it's a very strange kind of movie in that respect. One odd thing I wanted to mention about Cage and Jared Leto, they're supposed to be playing first generation Ukrainian immigrants. And, I don't buy that for a second.
I forgot about that. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there's like a bunch of times in the movie where Cage will start talking in Ukrainian. Like he'll start, speaking the language. And otherwise, you know, he has no accent. He has no, it seems like he grew up in Brooklyn. So that would explain why he doesn't have an accent, but still, I feel like it's just weird. And like Leto's the same way. And yeah, it's just a very odd character thing that like, I feel like they might've been able to change, you know, it does just feel like, there's not enough there with Cage's character. Like the movie never clearly defines what he's going through. Even with all the voiceover, like you have so much voiceover, and I never felt like I had like a really clear picture of what was going on in Cage's head. Like you get that he's starting to feel bad about what he does towards the end of the movie, but he doesn't seem to feel that bad, right?
Yeah, and particularly like not at all. I mean, he starts out, we start down the path of him starting to reform, right? And then like, just kidding, it was a front. I'm still a drug or gun runner, like full blown, like
yeah,
like the way. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, well, I was gonna say he hasn't grown or changed at all by the end, and like if that's the point, which I think it is the point, you know, then the movie should lean harder into that, like the dark comedy aspects. I feel like it should lean harder into the fact that like this guy's an unrepentant asshole. You know, make sure that people know and see that Cage is like the worst person in the world in this movie, like Jordan Belfort in The Wolf of Wall Street. You know, like I feel like that's a good example of a character who is completely despicable on every front. Like he's like does terrible things throughout the movie, and he never learns or changes. And he at the end of that movie, he is teaching people how to be like him. And the movie shows you that, and it doesn't endorse him. It just kind of like lets you watch it and make your judgment for yourself. And like, you can see that he's the worst. And I feel like this movie doesn't really do that in that respect. Yeah. And I feel like it's kind of like half measuring on each side. Like it wants to be seen. It almost wants to be like an audience pleaser. Like it's something for everybody. And I don't think this is the kind of story that can be something for everybody.
Yeah. And I think like you said, that it seems to come down on the side of, somebody's got to do it, so why not make your book, right? Kind of thing. Especially because that literally, like we said, it literally ends with him getting out of prison and just like going right back to it.
Yeah.
And then we get our like boom political statement title card where we find out the largest gun runners are the U.S., the U.K., Russia, France, and
I had it written down somewhere, but
I think it's the five of them. Wait, U.K. U.S., U.K., Russia, France. There's one more. I can't remember. But then, like, also, they're the permanent members of the U.N. Security Council. So that's whoever's the fifth one there. at home.
I think it was China. Was it China?
China. Yeah, there we go. Yeah. So then it's the five members of the Security Council. I'm like, that's its hard hitting political punch.
Yeah.
After like sort of endorsing being a gunrunner for 2 hours in like a weird way.
Yeah. So definitely odd. So Mike, how do you think this role fits into the roles that we've seen Nicolas Cage play so far in other films?
I think, like I said, it feels akin to Matchstick Men, in just the kind of like smooth, talky, quick witted kind of thing, doing illegal stuff character. But it feels sort of, man, I don't want to say the natural evolution again, but it's much more restrained. It's much more subtle than the type of character I would have expected, or the performance I would have expected from this type of character. But it also does at the same time feel sort of like the coasting superstar going to make a middle weird action thrill political statement movie kind of thing. Yeah. I don't know. And all the difficulties we've had categorizing Lord of War, that's how I feel.
I feel like that's the thing. We have so much difficulty categorizing the movie because the movie itself kind of defies categorization because it's trying to be so many different things.
Yeah.
At once. But I did want to mention this is another war-adjacent Nicolas Cage movie, which is a trend that we've talked about
quite
a bit.
Yeah.
You know, Racing with the Moon, Birdie, Temple of Urgidere, Captain Corelli's Mandolin, all movies that are about war but aren't actually war movies. And I think I think Lord of War is that. What were you going to say?
It even dates to Best of Time when he gives the monologue about going to Vietnam. Episode 1.
43 episodes in, we're still talking about Best of Time. So,
We're never going to let it. You made us watch it, Mike. We watch it. We're going to talk about it.
Yeah, absolutely. And there is one other Cage movie that is heavily influenced by Nicolas Cage's voiceover. That is, of course, Raising Arizona. Which is the best. And his voiceover in that movie is amazing. I'll just throw that out there. I'm a big fan of his voiceover in that movie. And like I've said, this movie feels like Scorsese light. And to that respect, I don't think it's as good as the actual Scorsese movie that Cage starred in, Bringing Out the Dead. So I did want to throw those out there. And then, Mike, were there any other moments or scenes that stood out to you? We already talked about the Life of a Bullet opening credits, so I guess we can move on from that.
Not particularly. Like, the one I did mention was the stripping of the plane was the only other scene that really jumped out at me. I feel like the sequences with Baptiste Sr. and Jr. are interesting compared to the rest of the movie. Like you said, that's where it sort of ventures into the dark comedy stuff,
right?
But only dips its toes in, so it doesn't get there all the way, I don't think. Like, there is that like weird sequence where Cage is showing off the 357 Magnum to him and he shoots one of his guards and Cage freaks out because now it's a used gun.
Many of my clients feel they can get through airport security without setting off a lot of bells and whistles. Personally, I do not recommend that. On the other hand, if you are looking for a traditional wheel gun, there is no substitute for the 6 inches of muzzle energy of the 357 Magnum. And of course, it will never jam.
Why'd you do that?
What did you see?
Well, now you're going to have to buy it. A used gun. How can I sell a used gun?
A used gun. That's a good one.
Which is, you know, that's the weird dark comedy going on. But I don't think it goes far enough, like we said a bunch of times.
I do think that scene is a great intro to that. That's the first time you see Baptiste. I think that is a great intro to that character. Just like, you know, it shows him being like merciless to like one of his guys for nothing, really. He just shot him for no reason. And you see Cage's immediate response. Like, Cage seems horrified at first. And then he kind of like recollects himself really quick. And he's like, now the gun is used. I can't sell this. And, you know, so... I do kind of like that scene for what it says about both characters. I did want to talk about the final scene of the movie with Nicolas Cage and Ethan Hawke, where they're in the interrogation room, and that's where Cage really hammers the point home: the President of the United States is the biggest gun runner of all.
Yeah,
I fully appreciate the seriousness of my situation, but I promise you, I won't spend a single second in a courtroom.
You are delusional.
I like you, Jack. Well, maybe not, but I understand you. Let me tell you what's going to happen. This way you can prepare yourself.
Okay.
Soon there's going to be a knock on that door and you will be called outside. In the hall, there will be a man who outranks you. First, he'll compliment you on the fine job you've done, that you're making the world a safer place, that you're to receive a commendation and a promotion. And then he's going to tell you that I am to be released. You're going to protest. You'll probably threaten to resign. But in the end, I will be released. The reason I'll be released is the same reason you think I'll be convicted. I do rub shoulders with some of the most vile, sadistic men calling themselves leaders today. But some of those men are the enemies of your enemies. And while the biggest arms dealer in the world is your boss, the President of the United States, who ships more merchandise in a day than I do in a year, sometimes it's embarrassing to have his fingerprints on the guns. Sometimes he needs a freelancer like me to supply forces he can't be seen supplying. So, you call me evil, but unfortunately for you, I'm a necessary evil.
Which I feel like that's shouldn't be shocking to anybody. But maybe in maybe in 2005 it was. You know, it was a different time. Like, it was 12 years ago.
I mean, even if you think back, like, in 2005, that era was kind of you had to, like, be American in, like, I don't, that sounds like a really dumb thing to say. But remember, like, the Dixie Chicks and how their career was basically ended for criticizing George Bush?
Yeah, absolutely. To be fair, they also, they pandered to a country music base, and the country music base is strictly Republican. But,
yeah,
no, you're right. Dixie Chicks, and there was a whole thing where, like, they, like, remember they had to change French fries to freedom fries for a while? Like,
yeah.
People tried
to
make that happen. It was ridiculous.
Like, it was a very weird time, but I think, like, we were talking, you know, you mentioned in the intro, like, 2005 is kind of around the shift to where we are now. Well, we weren't, they weren't Nazis then, but they...
Well, they were, but they were under the surface. Like,
yeah.
They weren't unleashed upon the world. But, yeah.
they were the first half of Captain America Winter Soldier, and now we're in the second
half. We're in the second half of Captain America Winter Soldier. Well, at the end of Captain America Winter Soldier, the government organization falls.
Wrong podcast.
I'm saying, if we're going by that analogy, the entire organization that the Nazis are in charge of collapses. So that could be good.
There's
that could be a good thing.
There's light at the end of the tunnel, everyone. So yeah, it is an interesting moment. Like you said, a time capsule for 2005, where, like, it's a bold political statement to, like, make a movie about that kind of thing.
Right.
But at the same time, it feels like it doesn't get there. Like, I feel like we have this one scene where we kind of reinforce the fact or bring up that, and then we have the title card at the end.
Yeah, no, the entire movie really doesn't address that at all, and then it's just like, oh, we'll tack this on at the end. And I think it's a great moment. I think Cage sells the hell out of it. It's a really good performance, and I think it really... I think it's a really interesting way. You know, like, Ethan Hawke's whole thing was for nothing, essentially, because Cage gets out free, and, like, I think that's a really cool angle to take it. I feel like the movie really should have dug further and deeper into that. I think that would have been more interesting. Did want to talk about Jared Leto's death scene? Where he blows up a shitload of stuff, and then was still alive after getting shot like 25 times.
Mm-hmm.
To bring that up, it reminded me of there was a scene in Wet Hot American Summer: First Day of Camp where Jason Schwartzman gets shot in the head, like like in the forehead, and then he has like a deathbed monologue after that. And that didn't quite happen in this, but like it basically could have.
Yeah.
Like, Jared Leto gets shot in the chest like 25 times, and then he's still, like, you know, moving around and like still alive for a few minutes after that. I'm not the biggest Jared Leto fan. He didn't really work for me in this movie. He's worked for me in some stuff. You know, he's fine in Fight Club and stuff like that. But I felt like he was playing his addiction very over the top in this movie. Almost felt like a dry run for his Joker from Suicide Squad. Honestly, like, that's kind of how I felt.
He had a premonition for 12 years later.
I can do this.
But, yeah.
I do want to mention the scene where Cage kind of comes clean to Ava, where it's, I think it's before she actually figures out exactly what she's doing, but she knows that something is up. And so she gets him to stop doing what he's doing, and he talks about it, and he has this whole thing where, like, why, she's like, why do you keep doing whatever this is? And he's like, well, I'm good at it. And it had, I think it's a pretty good scene, and it had direct echoes to the final episode of Breaking Bad. Like, there's that whole scene in Breaking Bad where, Walt approaches Skyler, and they have that whole, like, heart-to-heart, and Walt was like, I was good at it, and, you know, that whole thing. And it felt very similar to that in that respect. But yeah, the airplane landing sequence, you know, right before they Phil dismantles the airplane, I thought that was pretty fun. Also, it almost runs over a baby, which is just sitting there in the middle of the road, which, again, the part of the dark comedy aspect of this movie that doesn't really quite go all the way there with, but a little bit there. So that was kind of funny. And I think it was kind of interesting. The movie uses world events to show you when certain things are happening throughout the movie. So the movie takes place over a period of 20 years, but it never really addresses what year it is. So it kind of just shows you stuff happening in the background, or characters will bring up things that are happening in pop culture that will, you know, tell you what time period it is. So, like, you'll see Cage watching Gorbachev announcing the end of the Cold War, or you'll see people watching the O.J. Simpson trial, which was odd. And or, like, people will bring up, like, the America's election in 2000 and, like, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I thought that was an interesting way to handle time, because it starts, you know, we don't know, there's no title card or anything about what era we're in. And I didn't realize it was the 80s until we get that scene with Gorbachev talking about the wall coming down.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, we're in the 90s now. Who knew? Like,
exactly. I think they had cut out the voiceover and just done, like, more stuff like that, like, used real events to kind of mark the passage of time. I think that would have been a more effective way to, you know, move the movie along in that respect. And yeah, also, just throwing this out there, when the movie opens and Cage turns and speaks directly into the camera, my immediate thought was Ferris Bueller's wore off. Like, that was...
God damn it. But I mean, even in the same, you know, the same vein we talked about, where we have this 5-minute short film that is the point of the movie, and then we have the other 2 hours. When he turns and faces the camera, he gives the, you know, the stats. I don't remember exactly whatever it is, but you know, there's enough guns to arm 1 in 12 people on the planet, and the question is, how do we arm the other 11?
Yeah,
and like that, his character doesn't change, like from there to the end of the movie.
Yeah. That's a great. That's a great thesis statement for what the movie is, right? So I think that's a pretty good opening, and then it leads right into the life of the bullet scene.
Yeah, I think that whole sequence is. We don't need the rest of the movie, I guess.
Yeah, the movie starts off great, and then it kind of just, like, peters out throughout. Also, I mean, I have one last thing. The soundtrack of this movie, filled with maybe the most obvious songs for every scene in the movie.
Yeah.
There's, the Life of Bullet scene is For What It's Worth by Buffalo Springfield, which is, like, the ultimate anti-war song. Like, it's that and Fortunate Son. Like, those are the two.
Yeah, yep.
Those are the two songs you hear in every anti-war movie. My favorite use of a song was when Jared Leto was doing cocaine, and it played Eric Clapton's Cocaine. Just so everyone knows that he's doing cocaine.
Yep.
Just so it was made clear. And they played, like, Hallelujah by Leonard Cohen, which is, like, the most overused song in every movie. Like, that's
– yeah.
It's there. But, yeah, so I don't know. Do you have any other thoughts about the movie, Mike, before we move on to Netflix reviews?
No. I think I just want to say I don't dislike this movie, even though I feel like we're being kind of harsh on it.
Yeah, again, I think it's actually pretty solid, you know?
Yeah. We should spend half an hour shitting on this movie.
No, I think there's a lot of interesting stuff happening here, and I gave credit to, like, I had a lot of really good scenes. Like, there's, you know, interest. I think it's an interesting enough subject that it's worth a watch, despite the movie not being great narratively.
Right.
I
mean, yes.
That's kind of how it came down on it.
I agree.
All right, cool beans. Well, Mike, we should get into some Netflix reviews for Lord of War starting right now. So we got a few here. Here's a 4-star review of Lord of War. Solid Nicolas Cage performance, interesting topic and direction, all tied to a story format that stood the test of time. Boy meets girl, boy loses girl. You can throw whatever you want into that mix. Boy meets gun trade business, boy loses gun trade business. Boy meets fame and fortune, boy loses it all. It's all here wrapped up in a dirty little smoking quote-unquote package that shoots first and asks questions later. Dark comedy, mournful and horrific tragedy. Cage's character has the balls to make it all happen, but not the will to endure the fallout to follow. Absolutely worth a watch. Reminds me of the movie Catch Me If You Can, but with a dark side.
Yeah.
Yeah, I do, obviously, the boy meets girl, boy loses girl is the format that all movies are based on.
Yes, correct.
There's no disputing that one, so I think that's a pretty astute observation from Netflix users. And then I got a one-star review here. I got a few one-star reviews here, actually, which kind of surprised me, but this one's pretty funny. One-star review. This is one of those movies where the first thing that happens is Nicolas Cage, as his character, turns to the camera and starts talking to you. That's in all caps. After the first sentence saying how many guns there are in the world, it felt like a public service announcement, and I cut it off. Voiceover narratives are bad enough when someone has to talk you through everything that is happening to them, and worse when they are backtracking. But the worst of all is looking at you while narrating. Very off-putting.
What?
Yeah, so you can't stand people looking at him through the camera. It's just, it's unsettling, Mike. It's unsettling.
I don't blame them.
And here's a one-star review of Lord of War. If you want perfect Cage acting, then you auto-watch Deadfall. Best Cage film ever. His acting ability in it is truly Oscar-worthy. This movie has almost zero action and no actual war. It was trailered as an action flick, but it'd more likely fall into a documentary category if not for the actual attempts by Cage to, I don't know, act? Nope, he doesn't act. Not enough Cage rage!
Wow. I mean, that person does have a point.
I mean, given the choice, I would probably watch Deadfall over this.
Yeah, at least Deadfall is really silly.
Deadfall is a really bad movie, but it's a really fascinatingly bad movie, and Cage is amazing in it, so he's not wrong. Sure. In that respect. Anyway, here's another one-star review of Lord of War. Tonight, my girlfriend and I were discussing the repercussions of the capitalistic arms industry cashing in on government contracts. Then we realized a movie on the subject existed on this site, and we hoped it to be a somewhat insightful look into the shady world of arms dealing to world governments. Boy, were we wrong. This movie is instead some rambling, incoherent rehash of every Martin Scorsese movie it hoped to be but could never live up to. The dialogue is laughably horrible, the plot is totally irrelevant to the whole Lord of War idea, and 45 minutes in, we just said, fuck it, I want to watch Family Guy. We put on the episode where Brian and Stewie go to Nazi Germany. I think it has much more education than this piece of shit. Oh, and Nicolas Cage sucks. Jared Leto is kind of funny, however. 0 stars. Oh, wait. I have to give it at least one? Okay, fine. 1 star.
Wow. Did you pick your own review, Mike?
Come on, I would not have chosen to watch Family Guy over this.
That's true.
Have some respect for me, man. Although, actually, that I do remember the one where Ryan Stewie go to Nazi Germany. That was one of the last good ones.
It is a pretty great episode, yeah.
Anyway, here's another one-star review of Lord of War. This is very short. This is so unbelievably bad. There isn't even a final shootout!
they got a point.
I guess. I mean, there is a final grenade toss. I don't know.
Yeah, there is a pass of a grenade at the end. You're right.
Yeah. Anyway, here's a 5-star review of Lord of War. Get out of the 1 stars here. Here's a 5-star. Lord of War, I give a big 5 stars. It's a tad bit slow at the get-go and really can't be considered an action-adventure because there ain't a lot of action in the flick. But the one redeeming quality, Lord of War has one of the most intriguing, reality-bending, surprise twist conclusions I've seen in a long time. Well worth an expense extra-large box of super salty popcorn and a thirsty 2-ounce sody pop. I'll watch it again, you bet.
What?
I think if... Towards the end, he kind of turns into Ducky from A Land Before Time. Like, just... yeah, <what?
laughs> he just what goes into a bit without warning us. He's going into a bit.
Yup, yup. I'll sell you popcorns for 2 pence. See. And finally, I got one last one: a 5-star review of Lord of War. Haven't seen the movie yet, but I. But I look at the cast and Jared Leto is in it. Whoa, must be a good movie.
Jesus Christ.
And that person obviously hasn't seen the majority of Jared Leto's filmography, but
this just goes to prove the infallibility of the Netflix review.
Yeah, truly the finest of the fine in terms of the Netflix quality. So yeah, Lord of War, solid time. Very flawed, very problematic, but I think that it is a very solid watch. Better as an educational experience than it is an actual movie, but you know, I think there is value in it, and it is available on Netflix right now, Netflix Instant Watch. So there is that as well. Mike, do you have anything else to add about the movie before we wrap up?
No, I think you summed it up pretty well, and I agree with your thoughts.
All right, cool beans. So, Mike, where can we find you online this week?
You can find me at twitter.com/mdfilmblog, and if you like Dungeons & Dragons, my friends and I post our games at youtube.com/geonerd79.
And you can find me online at twitter.com/msmithfilmblog and all of our podcasts and stuff at filmbook.com. Thank you so much for listening to The Complete Works. I am Mike Smith. That is Mike DiCriccio. If you're listening to this review via our podcast on iTunes, you can subscribe to the podcast, rate it, take a moment to give us a review, help support this podcast and Filmbook by taking part in our Patreon campaign. You can find our Patreon campaign page at patreon.com/filmbook. And any and all feedback, compliments, topic discussions, even hate mail can be sent directly to podcast@filmbook.com. You can list the podcast you're emailing about in the title of your email, because we produce just so many different ones, hard to keep track. We would love to hear from you. Now, join us in 2 weeks for another episode of The Complete Works, in which we will be talking Nicolas Cage's role in Gore Verbinski's 2005 film, The Weatherman. So I'm eager to see that, because I love Gore Verbinski. I've never seen The Weatherman, so that'll be interesting. It's kind of his small-scale movie that he made in between Pirates of the Caribbean. so should be kind of cool. So that's also I keep seeing the title, and I don't know if you know this about me, Mike. A lot of the times, if I see a title for a movie, almost instinctually, I will start singing the title of that movie to the tune of a song that like already exists. So for example, when Gone Girl came out, I kept singing it to the tune of Young Girl. So it was like, Gone Girl, you're out of your mind.
Jesus Christ. Okay.
And with The Weatherman, I've been singing Pearl Jam's Better Man over and over again as we've been approaching this movie.
Oh my God. She just can't find a weatherman. Like,
can't find a weatherman.
That's amazing.
Anyway, you can also keep an eye out for Film Bookcast, where this week we'll be reviewing Logan Lucky, I assume.
Yes.
I think that would be the obvious one. The long-awaited return of Steven Soderbergh. He retired 4 years ago, and now he's back.
Can't wait.
So, pretty excited. Have you seen the trailers for Logan Lucky, Mike?
I have not seen a full trailer. I've seen clips and pieces and stuff, you know, scrolling on Twitter.
Okay.
Trying not to watch the whole trailer, but it looks insane.
Have you seen any of Daniel Craig's performance in the trailer?
Mostly the scene of him stripping in the backseat of a car.
Okay. So have you actually heard his voice?
I don't remember, no.
Oh, man. You are in
for
I'm
very excited. Yes.
I'm pretty excited about Logan Lucky. So that's coming out this weekend, so we'll review that sometime next week. Thank you guys so much for listening, and thanks for getting in the cage. I think it's time we stop. Children, what's that sound? Everybody look what's cool.